Will you pray with me? O Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be pleasing in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Not long ago, I was listening to a podcast, and the person being interviewed on that podcast was named Sam Harris. He's a neuroscientist, he's a author, he's a philosopher, and he was talking about faith, and Christian faith in particular, and he started to talk about Jesus, and he said that Jesus was really not all that big a deal. He basically said Jesus was just another wise teacher who would help us connect to the divine energy in the world. And it got me thinking, do I agree with them? Who's Jesus? Because I think Jesus is something more than just a teacher. I think Jesus is something more than just a wise person who is able to connect with divine energy and experience enlightenment. But this guy doesn't. Who's Jesus? Do I think Jesus might be different? What's going on here? And as I reflected on this question, I thought this is the same question people have been asking for thousands of years. In particular, 2,000 years. Who's Jesus? What's the deal with this baby boy born in Bethlehem, No-Nameville, Jerusalem's suburb? What's the deal with this? Why do Christians make such a big deal about Jesus being born? Who is he? Who was he? What did he do? Why does it matter? And why would you change your life based upon this? Why would you believe that anything would change based upon this teacher, this unschooled rabbi who wandered around with hangers-on, who called themselves disciples, who called him teacher even though he'd never been properly educated, who died the death of a criminal, and then whose crazy followers went around saying, guess what, he's not there anymore. Who's Jesus? You ever thought about that question? Well, the first people to come and visit Jesus after the shepherds had left were these magi, these wise men. They probably weren't kings, but they could have been. There probably weren't three of them, but there could have been. You see, in a world without streetlights and light pollution, people paid attention to the heavens. They paid attention to the stars. And I'll never forget what happened after Hurricane Irma. I got to see the Milky Way in Southwest Florida. Because there was no light pollution. I could pay attention to the stars. Just like they did so long ago. Except they knew more and they paid attention more. You see, when Halley's Comet showed up in the year 12 BCE, they noticed and paid attention. And some say that may have been the star that led the wise men to Bethlehem. But it might not have been. Because you see, a few years later, in the year 7 BC, Saturn and Jupiter aligned not once, not twice, but three times within the constellation of Pisces. Which to us means absolutely nothing, and most of us probably couldn't find Pisces unless it was labeled on a map. But to them, it meant a ruler will appear in Palestine, heralding the last days. Maybe that was the star or the sign that the wise men followed. It might have been, but not necessarily. Because you see, Chinese astronomers noticed something that happened near the end of the 5th year BC and went on into the 4th year BCE that hung in the heavens for 50 days. A supernova provided light in the western sky for 50 days, as recorded by Chinese astronomers. And you see, these people who paid attention to the heavens, they saw these signs that we would probably have missed. And they followed them. They went to Palestine. And they went to where every king would be naturally born. They went to go talk to the person who was currently the king of the Jews. They showed up at the king and said, "Hey, we're here to visit your baby." And you know what Herod said? They didn't record this in Matthew's gospel. "I ain't had no baby." And so he quick went to all the experts, because clearly Herod wasn't one. Where is the Messiah supposed to be born? Where is the son of David supposed to be born? Because I don't know, and I need you to tell me. Because someone's after my throne. And he was just born. And then he sent the kings on to Bethlehem, because the experts gave him the news. This is where the baby's supposed to be born. And that's where the star settled. The star laid in a manger. A food trough for animals. Who is Jesus? Why is it, what makes him so special? The wise men followed him there. And like I said, we're not the first people to ask who is Jesus. But those first people that were not shepherds said he was the king of the Jews. The rightful king of the Jews. But what does that mean? What in the world does that mean? What does it mean to be king of the Jews? Does it mean that you get to tell people what to do? Does it mean, as Mel Brooks said, that it's good to be the king? You get to do whatever you want? Well, let's think about that. What does it mean for Jesus? Who is Jesus? Jesus, you see, well, we need to step back a little bit. We need to step back all the way to Abraham and jump into Genesis. Because in order to understand who Jesus is, as far as what the New Testament is going to talk to them about him for, we need to understand what the only Bible that the people of that time understood. There was a man named Abraham who was given a promise. You might know this promise. He was blessed. He was going to have many, many children. So many children he could not count them. Like sand on the seashore. Right? Okay, some of you are familiar with that story. That's awesome. There's another part of that promise that you might not remember. The purpose of Abraham being blessed with so many children is that he could bless every nation in the world. Abraham's promise was so that his children would bless everyone. And they didn't do a very good job of that. So we keep going through the Bible and we get to the book of Exodus and we hear another promise. You see, after Moses delivers the people Israel out of slavery in Egypt, they go to a mountain. And while he's up on the mountain, they create a treaty. And what happens when you create a treaty with a bunch of slaves? You make them a nation. Because you can't make a treaty with a bunch of people. So you create a nation, and the nation is called Israel, right? So this nation Israel, who's made up of a bunch of Hebrews, receives an identity in this treaty. I will make you for me a kingdom of priests, says Yahweh to Israel. What's the purpose of priests? To connect us to the divine. To connect and reveal that which is invisible in the world. So they get a new identity. Not only are they supposed to bless all nations, but they are also to be able to introduce people to God, the one who delivered them from Egypt. Well, they don't do a very good job of that either. And they go into exile, and then they come back, and then we get to the New Testament. Who is Jesus? Jesus is Israel as Israel was always meant to be. A light in the darkness. God's high priest, revealing God to the world. That's what the Old Testament seems to think. At least how it's interpreted by the New Testament authors. But you see, Jesus walked around with a bunch of fishermen. And he asked them, "Who do you say that I am? And who do the people say that I am?" And the first question, "Who do the people say that I am?" The people say, "Oh, well, you're Elijah. You're a great prophet, a great teacher." Sounds similar to what Sam Harris was saying, right? You're a great person that we should all pay attention to. "Well, who do you say that I am? You guys know me best." And Peter, the one who always speaks without thinking, just blurts out, "You're the Messiah." What's the Messiah? The Messiah is a fancy word that means anointed one. You are the one who reveals God to us. You are the one in which all of our hopes hang. "This is who you are, Jesus." And Jesus' response is that only God could have shown that to Peter. And then we go through time. The question continues to be asked. People continue to wrestle with, who is this Jesus that was born that gives us cause to celebrate at Christmas? A light in a dark place. And C.S. Lewis, who wrote many of his books and taught many things around the World War II in England, he said, there's three options for us with Jesus. And he wrote this in Mere Christianity, which is a book published based on a radio show he used to do. He says, you have three options. Jesus was either a liar, and we can't believe anything that comes out of his mouth. He was a lunatic who believed he was something different than he really was. Or he was who he said he was. And he was the Lord of all creation. Who's Jesus? Who is he to you? Let's go back to Matthew's gospel for a minute. The story of the Magi coming and looking for the Messiah. They treat Jesus like a king. They treat him the same way the Queen of Sheba treated King Solomon, Israel's second most famous king. They bring him gold and spices. So they treat him like a king. They bring incense. We sang about it in We Three Kings. They bring incense, which is something that you use in worship. And I would love to use incense in worship here, but given the number of people who are allergic to perfume, that's probably not a bad idea. Or not a good idea. It's probably a bad idea. Yeah. But there are many churches where if you go to today, you will smell the smells. And so these wise men, they treated Jesus like a high priest and like a king. So maybe that's what he was. Isaiah talks about a light to which all nations will come. And maybe that's who Jesus is. The centurion who was there when Jesus died watched. And this Gentile, at the end of Jesus' earthly life, says, "Surely this man was the Son of God." Whom do you say Jesus is? Is he the faithful one of Israel? The light in darkness, the one who personifies God's never-ending, never-failing love. Is he one that you can follow? That's worth changing your life around for. Does he deliver us? Like Moses did to the Israelites in Egypt. Because you see, Jesus' disciples believed he was the Messiah, the one who would deliver them. And when he sat down at the table with them, it looked a lot different than this, because they would have been sitting on the floor. But they sat around the table, and Jesus began to break bread with them, celebrating the communion meal, except he got the words wrong. No Jew would get Passover wrong, but Jesus did. He broke the bread and he said, "This is my body, which is given for you." And maybe his friends thought he'd had too much to drink, because then he picked up the cup and said, "This is my blood poured out for you. Every time you do this, remember me." Every time you celebrate deliverance, remember me. Every time you remember how you cried out to help for God, cried out to God for help, and God delivered you, remember me. Every time you sit down and eat with people, remember me. And if we ask the question, who is Jesus, then we begin to think about this. How do we remember him is impacted by who we say he was. If he was the deliverer, the light and the hope, which I claim that he is, then when I remember him, I remember all the times that I was lost and now I'm found, that I was forgotten and now I'm remembered. I remember all of the times where I couldn't find my way out of a paper box. Paper bag, paper box. It's one of those screen door on a battleship moments for me. Forgive me. I remember Jesus. Because I understand who I believe he is. He wasn't just some teacher. He was a teacher. He wasn't just some lunatic who believed he was the Son of God. He was the Son of God. He wasn't just anything. He was both and. He was both human and divine. He was both a teacher and the Son of God. He was so much more that he defies every definition I try to put on him. Every time I try to define him. Because of that, I follow him. And this morning, you may not know who Jesus is for you. And that's okay. We're about to say he's a mystery. But I promise you that if you follow him, if you follow the star in Bethlehem, you will find God. Let us go to our communion liturgy. Amen.